Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to tonight's edition of Students for Better Future Radio. I'm your host, Doreen Finkel, and we are live. Hello, everybody. Welcome to tonight's edition of Students for Better Future Radio. I'm your host, Doreen Finkel. And folks, tonight we have a very interesting episode coming up. We're going to be talking about a couple of things, but one of them is actually a word. It's called perseverance, and a great president that was associated with it. And I'm going to have you guys guess in a little bit. And before we go to that, we're going to be talking about the Oregon shooting today. And I'd like to express my condolences to the families who were hurt by this and just everybody involved in this terrible tragedy. And I'm going to read you a little bit. It says 10 people were killed when a gunman opened fire at Oregon's Umpqua Community College on Thursday, forcing the nation to yet another mass shooting. Seven other people were injured, and the shooter is dead. Douglas County Sheriff John Hanlon told reporters that earlier estimates had put the number of people hurt at a much higher rate. The shooter was a 20-year-old man, according to Oregon Governor Kate Brown, who ordered flags be flown at half staff until sunset on Friday. And Cassandra Wielding, who's actually a student at the Roseburg campus, was in class when the shooting started, and this is what she heard. She heard a popping noise, almost like a balloon popping, and she knew something wasn't right, so she got down. She said all of the students in her classroom dropped to the ground, and they huddled together behind backpacks and chairs and underneath tables. We locked the doors, they turned off the lights and whatnot, and that was her harrowing account. Again, I want to express our condolences to everyone involved in this tragedy. We need to move forth on this stuff. Somewhere there has to be a line between something like this and perhaps those who are responsible for using a weapon in the right way. But I do want to point out that people like that who do the shooting, if they don't use a gun, they will sometimes use another weapon, such as whatever it is. We don't always want to go ahead and blame the particular gun. It's the people who use it and how they use it. So, folks, let's see how this unfolds here and see where we go from here on that. And I want to bring up our guest tonight, Ed Baker. Oh, before we bring up Ed, I do want to bring up something that the word perseverance, and I'm going to read it to you. I'm going to see if our listeners can guess who this is. This man failed in business in 1831. He was defeated for the state register in 1832. He tried business in 1833 and it failed, and his fiancée died in 1835. He had a nervous breakdown in 1836. In 1843, ran for Congress and was defeated. And then several times he ran for office and he was defeated. And then in 1860, this man, he signed his name as Abraham Lincoln. He was elected the 16th president of the United States. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is, number one, perseverance. Number two, he's had some in his life that he had to overcome. And let's bring on our guest now, Ed Baker. He's running for president. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
I can.
I brought up Abe Lincoln because I did go check, look on your website, and you also had some things you had to overcome, but you have overcome them, and you are now running for president of the United States, correct?
That's right.
Can you give us a little background about you?
Okay. Well, I actually live in the state that you were just speaking about, Oregon, and I am a lifelong Oregonian. Grew up in Clackamas, currently live in Portland, which is, Clackamas is very close to Portland, so I've lived in the same area my whole life. I'm 36 years old. I'll be turning 37 on the 9th of this month. And, you know, just a typical working life. You know, I right out of high school, I was working in call centers and worked my way up and into management positions. Also had some retail management experience. And never a real interest in politics in particular, but over the last few years, I've become more involved, more aware, I guess, of the situations that are going on with politically, and I just feel that I have some qualities that are not there in some of the other candidates that will appear on the ballot, and I want to give the American people the option to, you know, decide for themselves what it is that they look for in their president, and if I meet those qualifications in their eyes, then I am an option for them to consider.
A lot of our listeners, Ed, have been disgruntled with the Republican Party, and some, you know, some of the Democrats too. And I will tell you, in fact, it's a lot of people have been disgruntled with the Republican Party, and what so somebody like you could offer them an alternative. And so let me ask you, what all of a sudden decided to make you actually get into politics and run for president?
What made me decide to do this?
Is anything in particular?
Okay. Yeah, I was having a little trouble hearing you there. Yes. So one of the things is that I get very frustrated when I see like a State of the Union address, and as soon as the president is done giving their address, the major media networks immediately will take you to a rebuttal from what they call the other side. So if you have a Democrat that's president, they're going to take you immediately to somebody that represents the Republican Party or vice versa. And to me, that I just found frustrating, that you don't even have 30 seconds to take in what the president has said, to get behind anything that they said before you're immediately taken to a rebuttal, where it's just this ongoing back and forth, neighbor versus neighbor thing. And I just, I'm somebody that I'm not a member of any political party, use terms like conservative, liberal, moderate, left-wing, right-wing. I don't know what those terms mean when it comes to a person in politics. I look at each issue individually. I try to learn everything I can about it before I speak on it. I'll say I don't know more than anyone that you'll probably interview that would be running for a position like this, because there's a lot to learn, and I'm not going to just talk to talk. I'm going to make sure I have some idea what I'm talking about before I start giving my thoughts on those issues. And so just because you disagree with me on one issue, and nobody's going to agree with me on everything, doesn't mean that the next three or four important issues you're not going to agree with me on, or that we're not going to have similar stands on those issues. So I think when I see somebody that represents the Democrats or the Republicans out of these debates, for example, what I hear is them saying, I'm going to represent this group of people and not this group of people. And basically, if they get elected, they pretty much are already saying that 40% of the country they're not going to represent. I'm not that person. I'm somebody that has a much better opportunity to unite people. I don't label them or try to find differences in them. And so that's one of the things. Another one of the big things for me was the events of September 11th, 2001 is something that I'm very passionate about. I do not believe the official story to be very close to what really happened that day, and I just encourage people to do their own research and decide for themselves. There's a lot of stuff out there that they can look at and draw their own conclusions from. But we've had a Republican and a Democrat as president since then, and both of them have said words very similar to don't allow yourself to question the official story of 9/11. And I do question it. I have done a lot of research on it, and it's nothing special outside of just what's out there, videos and literature and things of that nature. But, it's not like I have a hands-on.
What do you think happened 9/11?
Well, the thing that I don't get into the great detail where somebody's like, well, they want me to tell them exactly who paid for it and how it all happened. But the two things that I would say, first of all, that I ask people to look at if they think the official story is what happened. One is I don't believe that the towers, okay, you have the Twin Towers, World Trade Center 1 and 2, and then there's also building number 7, which a lot of people don't even realize also fell that day. It wasn't hit by a plane. I don't believe that those buildings came down because of the fires that they say is what caused the structure to weaken and it all to come down like that. It looks to me, and also working with the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, they believe that it was controlled demolition. Certainly in the case of Building 7, it looks that way. And then the other thing is that the lack of wreckage at the Pentagon makes it hard to believe that a Boeing 757 is what hit there. There's no fuselage. There's no, there's just a lot of things when you research those two things. Those are the ones that to me are just very obvious when you research them. Some people will still come back and disagree, and that's fine. But the bottom line is that there's a lot of information that is secret from the American people, where they classify so much stuff. And too often I think the American people are looked at as the enemy or as people that they don't want to know the truth about things. And that is something that I'm against. I'm somebody that just doesn't believe we should be classifying things unless it puts our national defense or our military in direct danger by having that information public. So
going back to the 9/11, do you believe that the Twin Towers themselves, were they demised by a bomb as well, or just the airplane?
I think some people that researches very heavily, a person named Dr. Judy Wood believes that it was something more like a directed energy. Obviously, I believe that the planes hit the Twin Towers. Okay, I'm not somebody that has a no plane belief or anything like that. But at the same time, I think that there were multiple. I don't think that that's what brought down the towers. So I think it was very likely controlled demolition with pre-planted explosives. Dr. Judy Wood.
And they detonated this at the same time the airplane hit.
Yes.
It was hours later. After.
Right. And so that's what I've researched, that's what makes the most sense.
Right. This could have been planned by somebody perhaps within our own government.
I definitely believe that there are people that were on our payroll that we, elect or that we entrust to protect us, that we're involved in. And my thing is that, I'm certainly not able to go so far as say that, the president knows or the vice president or, Donald Rumsfeld or whatever, inserting in these names. But the thing is that if a president came across information at some point or somebody, within those administrations, had information after the fact that said, hey, the official story is not what happened. We know that that's not what happened. And if they don't make that information public, to me, they are part of the cover-up. So I say anyone that knowingly planned, executed, or covered up the events of September 11th need to be punished to the fullest, no matter who they are. And so if I am elected, one of my big things is to have a real investigation. And, yes, there's a lot of evidence gone, but I'm sure that there's a lot of things. There's a lot of witnesses that were never called. you know, President Bush and Cheney, Vice President Dick Cheney, testified together off the record behind closed doors. So as you research it, you find things like that where it just wasn't a real investigation that took place. And so I want there to be one. I don't believe we can move forward as a nation until we get that one right. The amount of deaths, you know, caused by it, the amount of money, the loss of our innocence and our freedom in a lot of ways, it changed the world that day. And I do not believe the official story to be true.
So now let me ask you this. We do a lot of, a lot of our radio shows are about different governments of the world. And we have done some stuff on the Nazis. And the Nazis have done what you call staging of events.
Sure.
To get political opinion to do a certain thing.
Right.
Okay. So would you happen to say that that's along that path? Okay.
False flag
okay. So now would you believe that whatever happened that day, because then you had a series of laws passed, called the Patriot Act and whatnot, in which, it allowed for our security to be changed. And, when you go to an airport, you are pretty much I don't want to say strict, but you are looked into, okay, and even today you have drones out there, you have a lot of things in which privacy can be invaded, and
exactly.
Could it be along those lines that maybe the government, that maybe something was staged so as to get a law passed?
For sure, I'm positive, or that's my belief, and so I mean, ultimately, it seems that a lot of this is about control over the people and taking away freedoms. There's a number of things. I mean, the Department of Homeland Security came right out of 9/11, Patriot Act, you said, the TSA, the NSA, whatever other alphabet soups you want to throw in there. But these are just what you said. They took away freedom. Then you got these government contracts that came out of this as well for Halliburton, and all this military stuff, trillions of dollars that went into these wars. And I mean, I have the statistics somewhere here, but I mean, it's just thousands and thousands of something like a 500,000 Iraqis that died,
mm-hmm.
as a result of that war.
Mm-hmm.
we focus, of course, on our own people, but I mean, there on 9/11 it was like 2,996 people that died, and 343 of those were firefighters. I mean, it becomes just numbers. But I mean, if you lost somebody that you loved in that event, your life is shattered forever. And so, for me, it's something I'm very passionate about. I think that the other candidates that will appear on the ballot will not touch this, and so this is one of our differences. This is one of the things that I am definitely fighting for, and I do have a great amount of support from the community that wants the truth to come out about 9/11.
And since we're on this note here, I do want to remind everybody, again, about the Nazis. One of the incidents they staged was called the Gliwice incident. And that was a false flag operation by the Nazis forces posing as Poles on August 31st, 1939, against the German radio station Sender Gliwice in Gliwice, Upper Silesia, Germany, and on the eve of World War II in Europe. And the goal was to use the staged attack as a pretext for invading Poland. So what they did was they did a staged event so that they can go into Poland and take over Poland. And this provocation was best known of several actions for in Operation Himmler and a series of unconventional operations undertaken by the SS in order to serve specific propaganda goals of Nazi Germany. And then there was at the outbreak of the war, and it was intended to create the appearance of Polish aggression against Germany in order to justify subsequent invasion of Poland. So, folks, this type of tactic has been used throughout history, and it was quite strange that we had this thing happen on 9/11, and then all of a sudden you have a series of laws passed. And I could tell you that one of them that I don't like, is that when I travel, and if I travel, especially with my family, but, you go on those lines in the airport, you have to take your shoes off. I mean, you have to take this off, that off. I mean, you might as well just pass through the thing with nothing on. But my son, one time when he was going back about 2 years, and Ed, I'm going to tell you this, we had gone from Newark to the Bahamas, and my 9-year-old son was actually pulled out of line, and he was searched heavily. So, I don't totally agree with having your kids radiated like that. So,
right.
Folks, so, I mean, but it comes in all ways. You see drones out there. Who knows if they can go into your computer, and it's all sorts of laws. You can even get a ticket in the mail if you're speeding in the highway in New Jersey. I don't know how that came about, but unless you see it, and you don't even see a cop, by the way. And especially if you're going through Easy Pass, they send your ticket and all of that in the mail. And what they do is they measure your speed from one Easy Pass toll to the next one. And so they see when you log in on the tolls. And if they say you're going from one stretch to another fast, they send you your ticket in the mail. So, let's stick with our topic here. Very interesting topic. I'm just curious, but do you actually believe that this is our own government orchestrated this to get the laws passed? Was there another government involved, or?
Well, again, I mean, these are the questions where I don't know. I mean, I just, it's based on, what I've researched and things of that nature. So, I mean, what I encourage people to do is that if you, research this and you say, the official story just doesn't make sense, it doesn't add up, which is where I got to pretty quickly, that's where we really need to be, and then if people want to draw their own conclusions and whatever, that's fine. But the problem is then you start fighting each other. It's like you start arguing about those things. And the bottom line is that we should all be very upset that, if the official story isn't true, that this was able to happen. And we should be demanding a real investigation, the truth to come out, and those responsible to be punished. And I think if that happens, I think that the American people will demand their freedom be restored, that a lot of these things that passed as a result of that they would be taken off the books. And again, that's the only way that I see us moving forward as a country. And I think that this probably would have a chance to bring us more together than anything else, being able to get on the same page with this. And because you remember how united the country came on September 11th, how patriotic everyone was right after that, flying American flags.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, everyone at that moment was ready to go to war because, they wanted to punish whoever, I shouldn't say everyone, but a lot of the people were, a lot more than a few months later were on board with it, or years later. And, I think if we can get this right, and actually get the truth out, I think the people will demand accountability. And then what I see going forward is a much less secretive government. I think that the people that will start being elected to positions will be much better representatives of the people than what we have right now. So, I don't know. I mean, you draw your own conclusions. I try not to get into that detail. I just definitely believe that the official story is not what happened. I do not believe that the buildings came down the way that they said, and I do not believe that a Boeing 757 is what hit the Pentagon. You can then stretch out and go, you know, it's pretty odd that a terrorist passport hits the ground, falls out of the airplane somehow, hits the ground and is intact so that they can use that in his bandana as evidence in the trial. And, you know, different things where somehow, some things don't burn, but other things do, you know, and somehow these things get, you can't find the black boxes, but you can find a bandana that belonged to one of the terrorists. I mean, so you just start researching, it's hard to even believe some of it, but, you know, so it's a dangerous thing, you know. I mean, I understand that a lot of people don't want to touch it, you know, politically. I think it's become more accepted now. I think there was a time where it was un-American to question the official story or something to that effect, and I think people are just much more awake now. And I'll close it out with this, just saying that if, as you're researching these sorts of things, when you start looking at the mainstream media and their history over the years of putting out stories that are not true or, flat out making stuff up. There, one of the examples is the Desert Storm, I believe it was, on CNN's telecast, and they were claiming to be, in harm's way there, and here they really were in Atlanta, or they were, you know, somewhere here in the United States filming the thing in studio, and I mean, And this, the guy's like going through the motions, throwing on a gas mask like he's, really in harm's way and these sorts of things. And the films are all out there on this. So as you research, you know, many of these places, the BBC and many others that are guilty of this, I can't believe that some of those places are even in business after that kind of thing as a news network. But, you know, just anything you hear, and I'm in Oregon, and you know, so the shooting today, you know, I don't sit here and jump to conclusions that everything's a false flag. I think I would lose credibility if I did that. But, you know, I just say before you jump to conclusions, make sure, don't believe the first thing you hear. Yeah, don't believe the first thing the media tells you.
Right. So. And I do want to also bring up, I know we talked about the Nazis, but in 1960, the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff signed off on a plan called Operation Northwoods. Yes, okay, and let me tell you what that was. It was Operation Northwoods to blow up American airplanes using an elaborate plan involving the switching of planes and also to commit terrorist acts on American soil. And then in that case, back then, they wanted to blame it on the Cubans in order to justify an invasion of Cuba. But the operation was not carried out only because the Kennedy administration refused to implement these Pentagon plans. Yes. So,
well, and as you read that even in more detail, I mean, it comes out to be very similar to what happened that day. I believe it even had to do with smashing planes into buildings and the whole thing there. And either that or it was on a second occasion that the very similar thing was proposed and it was ruled out because it wasn't realistic or, you know, they didn't think that it could be done or something to that effect. So who I listen to are the architects that understand controlled demolition, how buildings come down. So that's where the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth come in. I listen to the pilots that have flown the planes that were said to hit the Pentagon. And when they say, look, it would not be possible to fly, you know, at a maneuver and a speed and everything that would be necessary to hit that spot, that they say it just couldn't be done. And then you got firefighters who were inside the building that did get out, or their recordings, the ones that didn't get out, but the recordings have been released of what they said that they were experiencing inside the buildings, many, many secondary explosions, a number of things like that. Those are the people I listen to and where I base a lot of my, belief on this is what they're saying. And it just makes a lot more sense. So when George Bush said, don't allow yourself to question the official story, that day, something clicked with me when he said it. And I said, wait a minute, you know, I don't one, I guess I don't like being told what to do or what not to do. And so I just didn't feel it was right the way he said it. And that's when I went right on, started researching. And the first thing I saw was a 2-hour video from Richard Gage and the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And basically I got hooked from then, because things that were on that show there, the video, just made a lot more sense. And from there, you know, it's been years of spending a lot of time, you know, watching videos, reading things, and then going out and participating and raising awareness to this. And again, I always just encourage people to do their own research and decide for themselves. But those are the things I point at.
So this is quite interesting here. I do want to ask you, and on your site, you said you strongly believe in punishing the bad guys. How would you do it?
Yeah, are we still talking 9/11?
Yes.
That
those who executed 9/11
sure.
were somewhere in the administration, like, let's say, more than likely the Pentagon or the CIA.
Right. Yeah, I just think that no matter who you are, and this can be said of police officers or anything else, but when you're in a position of account of authority and you abuse your power, I think that you need to be held to very high standards. And if you abuse your power, you need to face severe consequences for that. And so the same could be said for any of those people you just named, if it's somebody in the CIA, the Pentagon. You know, but how often is it that somebody blows the whistle on these people and the whistleblower ends up in prison and nothing gets done to these people
or
that
killed,
are having the whistle
killed.
Blown on them? So,
yeah.
So
or
that,
the whistleblower
that's one of my.
Killed.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Okay. No. And that's another thing too, is that on the 9/11 thing on my website as well, I've got a page all with about 13 videos about 9/11. One of them is about people that, you know, were witnesses or were speaking out that did end up getting killed or died under mysterious circumstances. You know, and so these things do happen without any question. But to answer your question, I think, you know, frankly, you know, some people are very against the death penalty. I can't imagine a case where it would be more warranted than this, if somebody knowingly planned this or executed it or covered it up. And so if that's the case,
called treason? Would this be called treason? If
well,
they know knowingly planned it? Yes.
Sure.
Let me just go back to Kennedy for a minute. Now knowing this, that about the Operation Northwoods, and all of a sudden 3 years later, Kennedy was killed.
Right. Yep.
So
there are a lot of things that he was working on or wanted to do, you know, with between that and other disclosure projects, you know, so different, you know, it's hard to say exactly what it was. I mean, this is one thing. Some people think that his wanting to disclose things about UFOs or things along those lines, that may have had something to do with it. But I think that there's no question that he was not playing ball. You asked earlier, are there other governments involved? And, you know, the term shadow government and things like that get used a lot. New World Order, whatever you want to call, you know, this sort of behind the scenes, I call it an evil agenda that I'm trying to, you know, I'm certainly not somebody that would go along with that. So I believe that, my belief is basically your two choices that the media tells you about, the Republican nominee and the Democratic nominee, most likely at the end of the day are going to end up being very similar when they're president. They're going to have very similar people that they're representing. And so that's one of the differences right there, is that I don't have I don't have any of that to worry about. You know, I'm an individual. I look at each issue individually. I'm not bought and paid for by corporations or, you know, any of that. And frankly, I wouldn't be running for president if I had a family of my own, because I wouldn't put anyone else in that danger. And because this is dangerous, and I'm not trying to be a hero or anything like that, but I'm as serious as can be, and I'm not going to, you know, have a gun held in my head and change for somebody. You know, I will do what's right. And so that's why I'm trying to do this.
And yes, and I do want to mention, you know, because you mentioned this is dangerous. It's actually in violation of the Fourth Amendment of the United States of the Constitution, and that's which the right of the people to be secure in their person,
right.
a person's houses, papers, and effects, and anywhere against unreasonable searches, seizures,
mm-hmm.
Warrants, probable cause, supported by oath, whatnot, affirmation, and particularly describing a place to be searched, and with property or people to be seized. So that's what you're what we're talking about here. We're talking about the Fourth Amendment of the United States of the Constitution.
That's right.
So, and
then they go on to these debates, and you have a Republican debate. I forced myself to watch the first one, only because I was going to be on a radio show where they wanted my opinions on it. And so I watched and saw Rand Paul and Chris Christie arguing back and forth, one of the more heated debates of the night, about just what you just said there, you know, as far as things like spying on phone calls and you know, things of that nature. And Chris Christie's response was that he wanted even more of that to be allowed. And they seem to think that this is how you're going to stop terrorism or stop things like what happened today in Oregon from happening, because every phone call is being recorded and monitored. And as much as I hate to say it, look, you know, we got, 320 million people in the United States, and, you know, these things are going to happen once in a while. You're not going to stop every violent act from happening. And to me, I know I'm switching gears here now and talking guns a little bit, but the thing is that, you know, the president today, and I'm not at all a fan of president bashing. I rarely talk about other candidates or the president by name or anything like that as I campaign. But today I was pretty upset, I guess, about, and it was very, it wasn't at all a surprise, the stance that he took regarding the guns. And I am a believer in the Second Amendment and the rights for people to bear arms. But the thing is that if I was president, the way I would look at this is, yes, it's a horrible tragedy. You know, we feel really bad for the families of the people that lives were lost and wounded. The person that committed this crime is dead. They've been, you know, they are no longer alive. And really, that's the bottom line. I don't see why we need to punish people that didn't do anything wrong because of the act of this person. And, you know, basically as president, it's either the fugitive has been, you know, apprehended, or the suspect has been apprehended, or they are at large, and it's one or the other. And in this case, they're deceased, as you said at the beginning of the show. So, you know, that's my thing on it. And I think too often we take advantage of tragedies. I've heard the saying, never let a good disaster go to waste, or whatever, you know, some term like that from politicians. Never let a good let a crisis go to waste, or something to that effect. And I think that, you know, I would be somebody that would be respectful of the family members that lost somebody. It seems like our current way that a lot of politicians are, they want to parade them now out in front of cameras and catch them in their moments of, you know, initial shock and grieving, and try to turn that into a political action campaign to stop, you know, whatever it is that happened from happening again. And I've got a problem with punishing people that didn't do anything wrong because of the actions of a few. And so.
Well, that's right. We shouldn't, you know, if you want to go that route, if you're going to punish, you know, everybody for the actions of one, then you might as well be like the Soviet Union, you know, or under communism. And I've often said that about the First Amendment of the United States, which is of the Constitution, because that does protect pornography, believe it or not. And, you know, and it does, and I'll tell you the reason why, and a lot of people aren't going to agree with me on this, but I will tell you why, because you can't stop an individual from looking at or doing whatever he or she wants to do. That's the argument on there. You may not like it, you know, but, you know, I mean, that's the issue that we have with the First Amendment on that subject. And any time you deal with the first ten amendments of the Constitution, that's
uh-huh.
called the Bill of Rights, by the way.
Right.
With every one of those amendments comes, it's all about freedom, but it comes with a great responsibility, and that's all it is, and they're there for a reason. The Second Amendment gives you the right to bear arms, and the reason why that's there because to protect yourself from an invader. And it's often been said in the past that the United States hasn't been invaded by a foreign government because we have these arms in our house. So that's the analogy on that. And we may not all agree with it on there, but that's the thinking of our founding fathers.
Right.
Go ahead, Ed. Do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I certainly don't think that we should, you know, have to be. First of all, I'm a big believer in the Constitution, Bill of Rights, and freedom. I don't like that we have something called a free speech zone needed to have free speech. I think that that's ridiculous. I think that I told you before that I mentioned a couple minutes ago that the you know, I'm a believer in the Second Amendment. I speak about that, and a lot of my supporters are very passionate about that. And one of the things that I say is that the day that they come for your guns, war has been declared and you are their enemy. And I definitely think I am somebody that believes that there should be some form of a background check, basic, but something that would make it more of a challenge for certain people that have certain felonies or people that have a severe mental illness to obtain a gun. But, you know, other than that, I think that if you are comfortable having a gun to protect yourself and your family, I'd rather have good guys having guns than just bad guys. And so, I'm a believer of that. So, I think what you said is right.
All right, let's switch subjects for a minute. You had also talked about Common Core, and you had said we need to end Common Core education. And I've often come out on that way too, because we on this radio station we call it government schools. Because this curriculum was developed, you know, with a bunch of people, and the government got involved. And the idea is, why should the government be telling what your kids should learn? And that's why we call it government schools. But go ahead, you talked about end Common Core. Oh, and I want to ask you along that, with Common Core, money is given to the districts.
Right.
Okay, so, and with that money, they use it in various ways. So how will you get Common Core out of the education system?
Yeah, I don't have all the answers. I'm not exactly sure how we do that, but my feeling on Common Core is, and this is one of those where I've learned more about it lately than the very first time I was asked, I didn't have any answer about Common Core. And someone like yourself, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners, I would hope will, you know, get in touch with me that have strong opinions on Common Core, any ideas along those lines. But my thing with Common Core, what you just said about the government's involvement, I would like to see things much more at a neighborhood level, a school district level, where, you know, parents and the community are coming together to decide how they want their students, their kids taught, and what is their priorities and things of that nature. Because I don't think too many parents are going to try to I don't want to say not push, but, you know, they're not going to want the worst for their kids or whatever. You know, they're not going to want to set the bar that low. My thing with Common Core is when I hear a parent say, I don't know how to help my son with their homework anymore. I don't know if complicated or they don't understand it. What you said, too, there about the money coming into the districts, that's, I guess, the incentive of why all these 42, 43 states have adopted the Common Core. To me, it just looked complicated. You know, when I've seen some of the math problems that are like a kindergarten level or first grade level, and you know, it's not just 2 plus 2 equals 4 now. It's, you know, you have to go through 100 steps or something to get there. To me, it's like it just seems extremely complicated. And I think about myself, you know, that I had to use flashcards when I was, you know, in early grade school. During the summer, I remember my mom sitting on the couch with a stack of flashcards, this times this is this, you know, and whatever. And, you know, I just don't know how I would have ever gotten through some of those things if it was any harder than it was. And I just feel for the parents. I just feel for the kids. What I would like to see, when basically a couple of things come to mind here. One is that I think the kids need to be allowed to be individuals and to be creative. And I think that we need to be more interactive and more hands-on and make learning fun and not the opposite of that, not harder and not, you know, to that degree. So what I would like to see is more encouragement in that area. And when I was in high school, we had a school where three of our high schools could go to this one school for certain classes, and it was called a skill center. And they would bus us over there. And I took a class over there called marketing and management. And I was in that class for my sophomore, junior, and senior year. So they had other classes at that place as well. They had like an auto mechanic class, and I don't even know what all, but, you know, all different. I think one was like a TV type station type thing or whatever, all different stuff. And what they would do is when they took a break, they'd get like a 10-minute break, and they'd come over to the store, and we would run a store from, you know, out of our class. So it was real hands-on. Let me just take 1 minute here to explain it. So as a first-year student, you would, you know, do textbook stuff, watch videos, do normal classroom stuff, but then certain days of the week you would work in the store as a cashier or, you know, one of the other things, positions. And then the second-year students also had classroom work to do, but then they would act as, like, supervisors, so to speak, over the first-year students. And then only a couple of people, like myself, would go on to a third year. And at that point, you're actually ordering product for the store. You're doing, you know, different things along those lines. So for me, that was huge because I knew at that point I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I knew at that point that I was interested in marketing. And I was able to get a job while in high school and, you know, in call centers and work my way up in call center management positions. And I think we just need more things like that, you know, where people are actually getting on the job, you know, during school, getting actual, like, training and doing real work. And some people got internships or things where they would go to the bank or whatever and work from the bank as, like, for their class. And that was, like, their, you know, once a week or twice a week, that was what they did for their credit for their class, was actually doing a job and shadowing, you know, or whatever. So I think we need more stuff like that.
Right, and also don't forget, you know, with Common Core, and I get a lot of this from teachers, is that, you know, who is somebody from Washington to say what a child from, let's say, Wayne, New Jersey needs to know?
Exactly right. 100% agree with you there, and that's something that Michael Howell, it seems like every time I do an interview, I bring up his name. It's kind of, but he's got a show himself, and I've been on a couple times, but he and I have become good friends, and he brings that up a lot, that if you've met one kid from Arkansas, you know one kid from Arkansas. You don't know a kid from Seattle, Washington, or Portland, Maine, or, you know, whatever, New York. I mean, so that's 100% agree with you that you know, if a person in Washington, D.C., saying that a kid from Arkansas, a kid from Portland, Oregon, a kid from North Dakota, all should be at that same, you know, way of learning. And then the other thing, too, is just individual kids within these classes. I can't imagine that this is benefiting, you know, it sounds like they're trying to make it so every kid is ready to go to college, every kid is ready to get a job. I don't get how that is possible. You expect the lowest you know, ability or the person that has the hardest time learning or whatever to suddenly advance up to a level with all these other kids, or others are going to have to go down to that level. I don't exactly know how they think that that's going to work, where everyone's suddenly going to be at that level and is going to be able to learn that way and all that. So I don't know. I mean, it's certainly not a perfect system. I don't like it. And I just think we need to put less power in the hands of the government, the federal level, and I think we need to put it into the hands of the communities as much as possible. And I think that in a lot of respects. I don't just think that in education, but I think that in, you know, just in general. I think we need to look at our, you know, law enforcement or just our, I just think that people need to be more active.
To localize.
Yeah.
Right. Because the people of that area know what's best for them.
Right. And so what I mean by that,
especially in different areas of the country.
Right. And what I mean by that, I guess, is that if you, you know, if you're being represented by people that pass a law that says you can't have a lemonade stand in your neighborhood unless they have a permit, or you can't feed the homeless in a park, which, you know, they've been doing for decades, right? And then you find out that this law is passed. I just think that more communities need to rise up and, I call it, stand up against stupidity, but to be able to stand up and say, wait, you know, this is our community. We don't agree with this. This doesn't make any sense. This is not what we want. And I just think that there needs to be more. I would just encourage that from a community level. And if I'm president, you know, I would encourage having more things be in the hands of the people at that level rather than just this top-down, I guess they call it, but, you know, being told that this is how it's all going to be. And I don't know. To me, we should have less government, and that what is there should be, you know, American people helping American people. And it should really be about helping them to have goals and dreams and opportunities to achieve them. And not just living on you know, I think a lot of people are depressed. I think a lot of people are stuck, and they don't see any hope. And so they just are, you know, getting their government checks and whatever, but they're not having any opportunity to ever really make a better life for themselves. And they're just becoming more and more dependent on the government. And those are things I'd like to be able to get us away from. I'd like to have people having something more to look forward to and goals. And I know that's when I'm at my best. I'm a very goal-oriented person, and you know, that's just how I always was at a very young age. And so I just don't see it as much. And I think that comes back to what we were talking about with the schools, is that I don't think kids are being allowed to be to have dreams and be individuals. And you know, now they get suspended if they, you know, bite a Pop-Tart and say it looks like a gun, or if they shave their head. A third grade girl, got suspended for shaving her head in support of a friend that had cancer, you know, and things like this, which to me is just, you know, pure stupidity, and it takes away from people being able to have compassion for others or to be individuals. And I'll just leave it at that, but.
Right. And also I want to ask you, because you're in support of the Confederate flag, and of course so are we. So what would you do to make that, I guess, a nationally recognized flag?
My challenges are that so many things get changed, and then how do you get it back, you know, and that's the challenge, you know, what you just asked me about another topic a few minutes ago. So about getting the Common Core out of the schools and out of the neighborhoods and whatever. So, and you could say the same with Obamacare and other things too, I suppose. But look, my thing is that I don't think the government should have put pressure on the people within South Carolina. Again, they took advantage of a tragedy where somebody went in and know shot up a mosque or something to that effect. And right after that, they came out with this thing about the flag. And so, you know, my thing is that most people that are proud to have the Confederate flag and fly it and display it are not racist. And that's what they're trying to make it all out to be, that it's a racist thing. And I disagree with that. So my thing is that I don't believe, one, it's okay to be you, and it's okay for others to not like it. and it's okay for you to continue to do what others don't like as long as you're not harming them. You know, if with that, if you're going up and threatening someone's life with it and saying that you're, you know, going to kill black people or white people or whatever, then that's a whole other thing. You know, then there's laws on the book to deal with that. But as far as the flag itself goes, I'm in support of anyone that wants to fly it, display it. I don't think it's right to label those people as racist or as anything else. I just don't get these changes, why suddenly we change everything and why we get into this political correctness. Or another thing is that you have people coming here from other countries that don't want to be Americans. They come here and they go, in some cases, and they want us to either apologize or erase our history from our history books, or they want us to make accommodations to make them feel more at home. And I have a problem with that. I think if you want to be here in America, and this to me kind of falls into the similar thinking with the Confederate
right.
flag, is just that, you know, love, you know, be here because you want
that,
to be an
that
American.
You should right. That
and we should not cater
people,
to you. To yeah. And the thing
cater
is that
to them. Yeah.
Is that, you know, if what they should have done is a person in California or Oregon or wherever. I mean, we've got opinions on this, and I've never been to the South, you know, but I'm a strong supporter of their, you know, of them believing their flag there and you know, feeling proud of it and wanting to display it and all this, and that they shouldn't be called the things that they're called or accused of. And the thing is that the people that were affected by this, their voices weren't heard anyway. It wasn't like it went to a vote of the people in the South or the people within these states. And so my thing is, if you're going to change a law or make something not legal or whatever that always has been, that should come down to a vote of the people affected that are in those areas. And so because without that, that's where resentment comes. So I have a huge
right.
problem with how it happened. I have a huge problem with the pressure that we always cave into. You know, somebody cries out about something and then all of a sudden it's politicians put pressure on these things happening and the voices of the people affected are not heard or represented. And I got a problem with that.
And also, right now there's close to 12 million illegal aliens in the United States. And now, since we have that, they have babies and they have family here. And this is why they want to push for the open borders and everything else. Because once you have a baby here, then that baby is an American citizen.
Right.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say I'm going to have to cut this off here in just a minute. Our hour went fast, but
okay.
I'm going to I will speak on that real quick you know, if there's ever an opportunity down the line, if your listeners ever, you know, would like to hear more of me, you know, I'd always love to be back, or I will give my contact info at the end of this if I may. But what I want to say is I take a very strong stand when it comes to the illegal immigration situation, and it's somewhat controversial, I know, but I have no problem with anyone that comes here legally and follows, you know, the process, and they want to be an American citizen, and they do it the right way. I have a problem with those that enter illegally, those that jump the line ahead of those that are waiting to come here the right way. I have a problem with those that overstay their visa or their amount of time they're allowed to be in the country. And I also have a big problem with those that are employing or housing the people that are here illegally. So I definitely take, one, we do need to secure the border. The exact way that that's going to happen, you know, is up to some debate, what would be most effective. I do think that some form of a military presence is needed, but the main thing is I want it to be less attractive for them to be here in the first place. I want to make it so that if anyone is employing them or housing them, that they are fined significantly, that they lose their licenses if they have to have a license to operate their business, and that if they, if necessary,
right.
that they are jailed. Okay, because
right.
That's the big one.
Okay, Ed,
okay.
we are out of time. Give us your website.
EdBaker2016.com. EdBaker2016.com. Yep.
Right, that's edbaker2016.com, correct?
Yes.
And Ed, it was a pleasure having you tonight, and you're welcome
Thank
back
you.
Anytime.
All
Great
right.
show, folks. Stay tuned till Tuesday when we have Shark Tank on, and also please go to Students for Better Future website. That's studentsforbetterfuture.com. And make a donation to the Tipping Point Contest. It's a contest where we are identifying college students, and they're going to write an essay on the national debt. So, folks, if you can do that, that would be great. And, folks, we will see you on Tuesday. Thank you and good night.